Francisco Alvarez is dominating. The pitching is, like, high-key been the best in all of baseball right now during spring training. The bullpen is fun. They're talking about Brandon Nimmo out of the leadoff spot. That and so much more on this episode of the Mets Stub Podcast.
Today's episode is sponsored by Aura. Are you tired of receiving spam phone calls to the point where you don't even want to answer your phone anymore? That's because data brokers sell your information to scammers and spammers and anybody else who may want to target you. That's right. Your full name, your home address, your health records. It's all out there. That's why we've been using Aura. Aura shows you which data brokers are selling your information and automatically submits opt-out requests on your behalf. Not only does this stop scammers and hackers from getting and using your information, but also protects you from them using that information to get into your social media accounts or bank accounts too. Aura is always on duty, looking to keep you safe so you can focus on anything else you need to focus on with peace of mind. So stop data brokers from exposing your personal information to that and visit our sponsor at aura.com/metstup. That's aura.com/metstup to get a 14-day free trial and see how much of your data is being sold. We value privacy here in the Mets Stub Podcast, and there's no better way to ensure your safety online than by using Aura. Thank you, Aura, for sponsoring today's episode.
What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets Stub Podcast. I am currently boots on the ground, bees on the G, in Port St. Lucie. If you are watching the YouTube video version of this, you will see how red my face is. I just shot a nice 93 at Astor Creek in Port St. Lucie. Great day of golf, good sun, Florida Mark is back, but we're ready to talk about some baseball, some stuff that went on today, some stuff that's gone on this past weekend. We talked about the Brandon Nimmo lineup thing. We'll probably have a more dense version of that conversation out in another episode just because we don't want this one to be an hour long for you guys. But no, it's coming. We're going to talk about it because it's insane, and I want to yell for about 25 straight minutes. But otherwise, lots of nitty-gritty. Like, this is what you come to the Mets Club Podcast for. We've said it before. We'll say it again. We're ready to talk about the minutiae of spring training, and we're here with James as always. Before we get going into the episode, make sure you guys follow us on our social media, at Mets Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Subscribe to the Mets Up Podcast YouTube channel if you want to see the video version of this. And if you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download, and subscribe. We appreciate you. James, how's the weather out in New York? Is it like 85 and sunny right now?
Shit, it's been raining for like 2 days. There was snow for like 12 seconds today. I saw that in my window. And it went right back to rain. But tomorrow's going to be nice. Next day's going to be nice. You're stuck down there in Florida. Don't take the hat off again, by the way, because that hair is abysmal. So be careful about that.
What's crazy is I haven't been wearing a hat all day, but for some reason I have hat hair. I don't know how I've done it.
It's like how they called Hey Arnold football head, because he had like the head-shaped football, but it was like long ways. Yours is like if they stood it up. With hair like that.
I look like I got the Lego haircut right now. It's like they put
the very Lego haircut. Yeah, you look like you're destined for the Navy SEALs, but we know you're really not. But it was a great week of spring training. Weird that we haven't talked to you guys about spring training for like a full week, so it actually feels like there's a lot of stuff to say. Last week we were doing our player preview thing, and you know what? I think we kind of got caught up in a game that we're not really made for, trying to feign numbers and fake views and stuff like that. We see a lot of other podcasts do it, so we're like, must be good for the algorithm. We're gonna do it because it's good for the algorithm. And you know what? It just felt a little dirty.
Yeah.
The views weren't all the way there. So we'll probably just do some more funky episodes like that, but not fully like that over the next few weeks, just so you guys have some steady content coming until the regular season. But that's not our game. We're not phony. We're not putting out fake content. We do real content. A lot of people do fake content. We do real content. But big news spring training this past week for the Mets is just Francisco Alvarez continues to be every single thing every Mets fan's ever hoped and dreamed for. He had two huge home runs, one of them off of Yuri Perez, 97-mile-an-hour fastball in, again, we've talked about it before, the Nitro Zone, up and away, Francisco Alvarez. You'll never get something past him there. And then in another game, I think it was that same Yuri Perez game. No, it was next day, the Nationals game. Threw out three runners stealing a spring training game. Like, what? This guy can fucking do everything right now.
That's the big wrinkle, is that, like, we know offensively Alvarez is going to come around. Like, there's never been a doubt in our minds whether or how good he's going to be at the plate. But it's been defensively, like, he was great framing, but he did stink at throwing out runners last year. Wasn't good. And in that game against the Nationals, throwing out three, was throwing him out from his knees. He was looking quick. He was like a cat back there. Those are all really encouraging stuff, too. And it's just like, I don't know, to me, when I see someone being able to throw out runners like that, it just shows athleticism as well, like especially the way that he was doing it. We know he doesn't have like a generational arm where like Gary Sanchez could sit on his knees and throw the ball 98 miles an hour to second base and throw guys out. Not a good athlete. Where I think Francisco Alvarez is now really tapping into that athleticism because we know he runs well, especially for his size, and using it to his advantage. And just like, he's so incredibly impressive. Even when he doesn't do stuff well, I'm impressed. Like, he just... I'm enamored by Francisco Alvarez right now.
Alvarez also, he always had a good pop time too. So it was always kind of weird he wasn't throwing these runners out. But I think another cool wrinkle, you said this was a wrinkle, but I think talk about the wrinkle on the wrinkle of him throwing these runners out. Two of them happened with Adam Ottavino on the mound. And Adam Ottavino has talked a lot about how horrific he is at holding on runners. I know he's made like a real point of emphasis this offseason to fix that. And there was a really cool article Tim Britton wrote for The Athletic about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, where Ottavino's like, I understand like basically the worst guy in the whole league at this. And then Britton went back and got numbers. And literally, he's by far, the last couple of years, the worst guy in the league at holding on runners, letting guys steal. Since 2000, Adam Ottavino owns the three highest total stolen base seasons for any reliever in baseball. He has 1, 2, and 3.
Jeez.
20, it was 22. I think it was 21. I think it was 2000, 17 or 16, one of the years of the Rockies. But top three. And last year, he had the highest average lead against him at first base by over 6 inches over second place, who was Aaron Nola.
A lot.
6 inches. No, everyone else was like another inch or two away from each other. And he was 6 inches away from the next person. So it's like, that was a really cool thing for that to happen with Ottavino on the mound. And he's been varying his, like, he's trying various times to play, he's working on his pickoff move, and it's happy to see that's happening. But so cool that Alvarez is there to execute that and making them all look better. And we're reaching a full fever pitch of Francisco Alvarez. And it's like, I know it's spring training, but it's a situation where like anyone can just tweet the word Francisco Alvarez right now in the Mets sphere, and you're getting 50,000, 100,000, 200,000 impressions on it. MLB's tweeting out his clips. Like, it's happening.
Well, here's what I was going to say is being at the park tonight, or today, actually, and seeing the crowd's reaction and the buzz around Alvarez. He got just as big an ovation as Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor today when they were announced to the plate. Like, people are like almost foaming at the mouth with excitement for what he can bring. Because whether you're stupid, whether you're dumb, whether you're old, whether you're young, whatever it is, watching this guy play baseball, you're like, oh, shit. He's a special player. Like, it's just, you watch him and you automatically get that feeling of like, he's different.
You said whether you're stupid or whether you're dumb, but not if you're smart or if you're like average.
Well, I guess I'm both.
Yeah, there you go. No, it's like special. And he's even like permeating the fantasy baseball world. Like, he's everybody's breakout pick. Like, Foolish Baseball's tweeting about him. Like, everyone is like, this is happening. Like it's happening in front of your eyes. And he's still going to be 22 years old this entire season. Turns 23 in November. You guys know how far away November is? Think about November right now. It'll be like week 9 of the NFL season, and Francisco Alvarez will still be 22 years old. That's how young he still is.
How many passes will Aaron Rodgers throw for the New York Jets by the time Francisco Alvarez turns 23?
I fucked this up last year. I'll never live it down. I mean, I don't know. Like, what can I'm so dejected by the Jets. I don't care about the Jets at all. Over one. Oh, he'll complete one pass by the time he turns 23. And if that's wrong, I'm never going to watch a Jets game the rest of my life. I'm just going to go off the NFL. But Alvarez is special. Everything good's happening. And it's just like, there's a buzz. And it's like, we were talking about lineup stuff. And I want to talk about the lineup stuff for a few minutes now, because there's a lot of conversation. Tim Healy kind of started it, which that's our boy Tim, but he knows the game. And everyone just ran with it. Every single person I messed Twitter had to give an opinion on the lineup, including us, because we're gotta be part of the game. But
yeah,
it's about Brandon Nimmo leaving the leadoff spot. And for some reason, just because Brandon Nimmo's been developing power and he's been getting on base a little bit more infrequently, now people are like, oh, he's better to be a middle lineup hitter. And I don't think it's like exactly an incorrect take that Brandon Nimmo would be a really good 2, 3, or 4 hitter or 5 hitter, depending on the team. But he's too good of a fucking leadoff hitter for this to happen in this team. And I think a lot of that's like people like Alvarez should be at the top of the order too. But it's just like, it right now, the way every player is, it has to fucking be Nimmo.
Yeah, at the absolute worst, the first three guys in some order need to be Brandon Nimmo, Francisco Lindor, Pete Alonso. And it feels like everyone's talking about Brandon Nimmo like hitting fourth. And that to me is like the crazy thing of like, they're like, we need protection for Pete. And I know you are going to bring up a little stat about who protected Pete in a couple of his best seasons. And it's like, no, he doesn't need protection. Like, protection would be great. I'm not going to say, ooh, don't want someone good hitting behind him. But why would we want to then, like, hurt what Brandon Nimmo could do for this team offensively just to protect Pete Alonso to then have less guys on base in front of him to drive in those runs? I'm getting deep into the weeds, and I can start yelling soon if you'd like me to. But it's just, like you said, Brandon Nimmo can be a middle-of-the-order hitter. When I say I don't want him to be, it's not because I don't think he's capable of it. And I think that's where people are getting lost in this conversation, is that he's more than capable. It's not the right decision with this team.
No, and I think there's a lot about this concept of having like protection in the order that I think is like an old baseball term. People have been saying it for 100 years, so it makes sense in their minds. But Mike Petriello actually wrote a great article about it earlier this winter about this concept. He was talking about specifically the Braves and the Dodgers lineups going into this year. And everyone should read it, look it up. I think it talked about Otani, it talked about Freeman, it talked about Olsen, talked about Acuna. It's significantly more important for the concept protection of a hitter who's hitting ahead of you compared to who's hitting behind you. Because you'll, like, statistically around the league, especially the best hitters, you're always going to hit better with the guy ahead of you on base. That's it. As long as the guy's on base, like, that's your protection. Like, that now suddenly, like, you have to be honed in on. You can't really pitch around a guy with a guy in first, because then a guy will be on second. No matter who's sitting behind you, they can't hit a single. Like, that's kind of part of the game. But it's all about who's ahead of you, who's behind you, and you alluded to it. We're going to do a longer episode probably Tuesday night, come out to you guys Wednesday, maybe Thursday, depending on Mark's travel schedule, just about how we'd order the Mets lineup or predicting the Mets lineup, something along those lines. We'll workshop that title for YouTube to be as sensationalist as possible. But in 2019, Pete Alonso's best season, can you guess who was hitting behind him for the most games of that season?
Well, it's not a guess. I know because you told me. And that man hangs around needles quite often. That'd be Robinson Cano.
Yes, Robinson Cano, 2019, Pete, the best season of his career, was hitting behind him more often than any other hitter on the team. So more games than not for any other guy on the team, Robinson Cano hit behind Pete Alonso. So I think this concept of protecting Pete, I think it is valuable, because we saw Pete get a little swing happy last year and like the batting average dipped and a lot of people kind of want to find reasons why. I think it was just his health, but this team doesn't have enough quality leadoff options to take Brandon Nimmo out of it. If someone was a good leadoff option, yeah, but they don't.
I want to say this too. Like, in terms of run production, the top three has not been the problem. It's been the rest of the order. And I know people will be like, well, then move him down and then he could help out. It's like, yeah, but Lindor and Pete Alonso don't drive in 100 RBIs each the last couple seasons if Brandon Nimmo's not leading off. Like, I don't, that seems like where the disconnect is like the offensive problem doesn't get solved by making your five hitter better by moving your one hitter away. And that's where I think people are not understanding how actually a lineup works.
I think, again, this is probably where we'll put this to bed before we talk a lot more about it in a few days. But I think a lot of people want to just pigeonhole Starling Marte back into that spot because, like you said, he feels like a leadoff hitter. Like, you've been around baseball for a while, you're like, I want that guy leading off. People talk about stolen bases and bat to the ball, but I don't think those really matter at all for leadoff spot. I think the one thing that matters for leadoff spot is getting on base. And in terms of on base percentage, last season was the lowest of Brandon Nimmo's career. I think it was 363. That would have been the second highest of Starling Marte's entire career. That happened years ago when he was a much younger man. So I think that it's just Starling Marte is just not a leadoff hitter. I don't think he ever was a really good leadoff hitter, like, analytically. I think now it's significantly worse. It's just Nimmo's too good at it to take it away.
Yeah, if Starling Marte is going to hit 320 with a 370 on base, he can lead off all day. Cool.
Of course.
Guess what? Starling Marte was dog shit last year. So, like, I'm not just going to give it to him without seeing him actually be able to perform at a major league level again.
It's the same with Jeff McNeil, where Jeff McNeil was kind of two straight seasons where he had 350 on base. I'd be like, okay, 350 on base. That's very suitable leadoff, that length line. So I would even then put Nimmo third, you do Pete fourth, Lindor second. That's amazing. But until Starling Marte or Jeff McNeil can prove they're that guy, or if something happens and Jet Williams or Drew Gilbert proves they're that guy as well, then you can have the conversation. But basically, there's no one in the team who I think is going to have a 350 on base, probably besides Lindor, Pete, and Nimmo. So those are my three options to lead off. Get to me. We're going to get deep in the weeds in this, talk stats, talk numbers, and we're going to go 1 through 9 the whole lineup. We're going to really go through the weeds of lineup selection. But I think that's where we're both at right now. We agree with a lot of things this podcast. That's a big one. I don't think you're going to sway me off of that anytime soon.
No, there's no shot. Now, I will be able to get you to get off this conversation as well, because I'll just bring up pitching now. Pitching. Yeah. And James is like, ooh, shiny. Like, I love pitching. Let's talk about it. Severino. Let's talk about Severino. I think that's the guy that everyone's the most excited about right now. I know Tyler McGill's pitching well. Manaea had a bounce back, all this kind of stuff. But Severino has now come out a couple starts in spring training. He's looked really good. About as good as we could have asked, truthfully.
The biggest thing I want to talk about Severino is like the way that the rest of the public is getting on him right now. On Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Leagues, I saw this on Twitter today from Joe Arrico, most added player over the last 7 days. I think people are seeing this and they're like, oh, this is actually happening again. Like, he hasn't really been fully healthy since we were in college. So I think that's like that again, that's something that high end is probably never coming back, but just there's such a path here. You could watch it again. You saw it this week. Like, he made mincemeat of the Marlins full 1 through 9 starting lineup. Jazz Chisholm was in the lineup. Luis Arraez was in the lineup. Jesus Sanchez, all the guys were in the lineup. And Luis Severino breezed through them for 3 innings. It was like his fastball was still fast. His slider and changeup graded super well. That new changeup is really moving across the zone. Like, I just see a good pitcher here. And again, this is echoing what David Stern said when he signed him. It's like, our only question is health. And we think he's healthy right now. So we think he's going to be effective.
This is, I met a viewer and a listener of the podcast. Shout out Joe on my plane down to Florida, which was also very cool. Sitting right across in the row from me. He's like, what's up, Mark? Love your stuff. I was like, hey, what's up, dude? Like, it's kind of crazy. But we were talking a lot about the Mets because we were stuck on the runway, not moving for 2 hours at LaGuardia because of bad weather. So it was, you just start talking to people because you're bored. And I was talking about, like, he's like, what do you think about Severino? I'm like, I love it. And it's funny because in my predictions, I predicted the Brewers to sign Severino because he felt like a Brewers player, where it's like this guy that's got great stuff coming off an injury, like buy low, sell high, like high, low risk, high reward kind of thing. And then you forget that the Mets now have the Brewers guy who made all those decisions. And you see with just the pitching that's been going on, the Mets have, I think, the best ERA technically, which doesn't really matter, but the best ERA, I think, in all of spring training right now. And with, relatively speaking, a rotation that you would say is probably not very good. Most people would say, what is this rotation? They don't have an ace. They don't have this. They don't have that. And a bullpen that's like kind of hodgepodge, but that's where David Stearns thrives. And that's why guys like me and James were so excited when he was announced as the president, because these are the types of steps that you can see that the Mets have not been able to capitalize before, where it's like getting the smart guys on the free agent market, picking up these relievers that maybe are a little undervalued but have actual talent and ability. And we're seeing it come to fruition right now in spring training in meaningless games.
There's also like a sad irony, because I think a lot of Mets fans this offseason were clamoring for a guy like Lucas Giolito, because people want like that stable, like innings workhorse guy. Like,
and a name.
He's 180 innings every year. Like, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball 2 years ago. Like, we should get that. Now Lucas Giolito has torn UCL. He's going to miss the entire season. So they just paid for a guy for innings. Now they're getting no innings.
And this is something that I'm now, because like you explained this to me a couple years ago, and it took me a minute to understand what you said when like you don't pay for innings, you don't pay for like sustainability. And Lucas Giolito, like that's it. That's put him on the wall. That's the poster boy of why you don't do this, because you are injury prone until you're not, and you're healthy until you're not. So like, and especially on the pitching side, like one little thing can just completely derail your season like that. Jose Quintana had a fucking tumor last year and didn't pitch for 4 months. Like, no. There's just crazy shit that can happen. So to pay for a guy based on like reliability, in theory, yes, if he's not your frontline starter, if he's your 4-5, that's understandable. I get it. But you can't pay that top end dollar for someone like that, which you kind of saw the Red Sox do a little bit with Giolito, was just like kind of overpay. And now it's going to completely bite them in the ass when like, there's other guys they could have gone after. Like, you probably should have put that money towards maybe a better pitcher like a Blake Snell.
It's also funny to talk about Giolito and Quintana. Like, how the teams go into off seasons, pay guys, give them physicals, and miss these injuries that almost take them out for entire seasons.
Like, we got to talk to a doctor.
If I was doing a physical on a pitcher, I would check for two things first. One, elbow. Second, tumors. Like, after then shoulder. Then, like, then we're okay. We're moving forward.
Biopsy. It's like,
yeah. Let's figure all this stuff out. But that sucks. I feel for Red Sox fans. They're going through it right
now. Of course.
But also,
and like, Giolito, too.
Yeah, it sucks for him, too. But yeah, I don't think Giolito was moving their bottom line. I think they're a fifth-place team with him and a fifth-place team without him. But I digress, because the Mets had a lot of other good starting pitching this week, bounced back. I think it's going to be a theme of the season where sometimes it's going to feel really gross and sometimes it's going to feel really good. At the end of the year, you're going to be like, oh, the Mets starters had the 14th best starters ERA in baseball. You're like, oh, that's actually okay, because Quintana bounced back in a huge way. It's 6 strikeouts and 3 innings against the Nationals. Big. And then also huge bounce backs from Sean Manaea and Adrian Hauser. I think those starts from Hauser and Manaea gave Mets fans a real taste of what those guys are at their best. And for both of them, it's just funny-ass pitchers. Like, hysterical.
And I think the thing with Manaea too is I don't know when it's going to happen, but and the Giants did this a little bit last year too, where it's like he doesn't even need to go, like, you don't need him to go 6 innings. He could go 4, and then you could have like a Budo or maybe even a Tonkin, who's looked like really good this spring too, coming in, get 2 innings or 3 innings to bridge you to that 7-8-9 at the end of the bullpen, and that would be a great start. So it's like things are going to be a little unconventional with this team, but there's pieces here that can make things happen.
I'd love to do that with Manaea with either with Budo, because that Budo is like, because Manaea, I'm going to talk about a little bit. Manaea is so funny when he throws, because he's so sidearmy, and he throws his four seamer, but like with sinker intent. So this four seamer, he grips it like a four seamer, but it kind of moves like a sinker. So I think that's why it's a weird pitch. But then he throws the sweeper on top of it, and they play well off each other because they're both coming in. You're like on the side of the ball, and they're both kind of fading, and the sweeper just sweeps down on you. But like Budo comes so over the top, and he's been so good with that high fastball. And then like the two new sliders he has and the changeup and everything is amazing. But when Manaea gets in these grooves, like he always grades so poorly in the pitch models. Like, Stuff Plus hates him. His strikeout minus walk goes up and down. It's not great. Like, our guy TJ Stats murdered him on Stuff Plus this week. A couple people sent me this to me, like, yo, Manaea stinks. I'm like, that's not what Manaea's ever going to be good at. And that's like a concept about like what these like Stuff Plus models are. So all the people who don't care about these numbers, like, give me the click 15 seconds right now. But they're always going to give guys more credit who do things that are repeatable, who just throw high fastballs that spin the exact same way and sliders that spin the same way or curveballs spin the same way. But there's so much pitching, especially where guys that don't have those kinds of pitches who pitch with feel. Justin Steele's like one of my favorite guys in the league for this, because if you look at his stuff on Savant or on these pitch models, it says fastball, it says slider. But then you talk to Justin Steele, he's like, yeah, I throw like a four seamer and a two seamer, and I have like 3 different kinds of sliders, like a two plane slider, a sweepy slider, and like a gyro hard slider. It doesn't come up in these models because they're all just slider. Now there's separating slider and sweeper, but it's still like variations within each. Darvish is so good at this. A lot of these touches, Wainwright was amazing at this. Nola is super good at this. Like, these touch and field pitchers, they're never going to grade well in those models. That's kind of what Manaea is, because he's kind of taking advantage of different fastball shapes he can utilize in the game. And then he's kind of breaking that sweeper off on top of it. And like with his arm angle, like sometimes it looks like that sweeper is moving 9 feet.
Yeah.
Like the way it comes out of his hand, especially the way his fastball moves and the sweeper off it. It's like it completely dodges strikes. It looks like it's coming at a left-hander's face, or right-hander's face, and it's like coming all the way out of the zone. It's an amazing pitch. I like watching a pitch. There's going to be some really ugly outings like we've seen, but it's like when it's good, it's good. And I think, again, he's not going to be a traditional starter. I don't think he's throwing 180 innings.
No.
But for 4-6 innings, like, it's awesome.
And then you have like Hauser too, which is going to be like the meat and potatoes guy. He's going to be the dude where it's like, shit, I don't know how he does it every 5 days, but like, man, he gets like 18 outs every 5 days. I don't know how he does it. It's unremarkable. He throws 92, but like soft contact king. Nobody barrels up the ball really against him.
He did it so well in this start too. He went 3 1/3 perfect innings with 5 strikeouts. So the 5 strikeouts amazing. We may not see him strike out 5 guys in a game like for the whole month of April, but he even has the 5 strikeouts.
What day in August is it going to be?
Yeah, he's going to have 9 strikeouts on August 12th. But he had 5 strikeouts, only 4 swings and misses, which is really funny. That's because he was manipulating both edges of the strike zone. He was working left to right, which I think is funny because I listened to a great podcast, Nick Pollock and Saris this week. The new one's called The Craft, and they were talking about Nick specifically, the difference between. Most pitchers really either work north to south or east to west, and it's kind of hard to do both. The guys who do both are like going to be some of the best pitchers in the league, like those banana peel guys. But a guy like Hauser is so east to west. Like if you look at his illustrator, it's like where he's putting these pitches every game. It's just like edge, 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 switching inside, outside, the way he's working that to both guys. And it's amazing. When he's on like he was the other day, it's just like a little sinker, a little fastball, a little changeup, a little curveball. It's just like bing, 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 bing on the edges. And it's like no one's barreling him up and he's getting guys out. It's just he's funny. Like he's fun. Like he's going to get murdered some days.
But then
you guys know in the middle of June, he's going to go 8 scoreless. And then
Braves are going to eviscerate him in Atlanta one night. Like
kill him. 7 earned runs in 2 innings. It's going to be ugly. He might get 2 outs one of the starts in Atlanta this year. But like he's going to be able to do these things sometimes. You're like, all right, this is a real pitcher. This is a real pitcher pitching. Like if you like watching Adrian Hauser pitch, that's how you know you're like a ball lover.
You're sick in the fucking head like we are. Like dude, I even told the guy on the plane because he's like, are you excited for the season? I'm like, I'm so pumped. I'm like, I can't wait to like watch some fucking like – this Mets baseball is going to be so different than anything we've seen the last few years in a while. It's just going to be so in the mud. Like there's, like you said, the bad games, the good games, it's going to be so worth it to watch. I'm excited. And another guy too, got to talk about a little bit here. Got to talk about a young Cylor Megill. This dude has been lighting up spring training, has been, you talked about Severino is talking to the town publicly too. I think McGill's starting to get a little bit of hype as well in the fantasy baseball circles and just people talking because just genuinely speaking, statistically, it's been maybe the best pitcher in spring training this year.
He's been dominating. His spring training stat line would be a hell of a game. 8 innings, 13 strikeouts, 2 walks, and a 1-1 ERA. That's a really good game. And the hype is insane right now. But I think the hype is, I almost think, especially from taking in so much fantasy baseball content and being so involved in that world, that I think there's so much more hype outside of Mets fans than inside the Mets fans. Because inside the Mets fans, it's like, I can't get hurt again. I can't keep watching this. I can't let this keep happening to me. But outside Mets fans, people are like, okay, he has the fifth star of their job. He's pitching really well. He has a new pitch. Like, he checks every box for a fantasy baseball player.
Yeah.
Job security, new pitch, good fastball. Easy to go. Where Mets fans are like, just please God, don't hurt me again. And the game against the Yankees this week, I think was like fever pitch because it was on national television in the middle of the day. Everyone was watching that game. If you give a shit about baseball at all. And like David Cohn was talking about him, Eduardo Perez. And then you have the viral clip where I think it was Bader or Pete were like, the boy Megill. And he gets a strikeout because they were mic'd up where it's like, all right, things are happening. Then he also 3 innings, 6 strikeouts, no hits. Like,
yeah,
looked incredible. New American Spork, 3 for 3 on whiffs. All 5 pitches he threw, got a swing and a miss. The cutter is also a new pitch with the splitter, which I think is also a really cool, fun new weapon for him, especially against lefties where he struggled. And the slider is a whole new pitch too. It's much sweepier. It's moving a lot more across the zone. Like there's a lot of stuff happening here.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. These are all like, these are great places to be right now. I think if you weren't a Mets fan, James, how would you be picking up Cylor Megill right now in fantasy baseball?
If I wasn't a Mets fan, for sure. And I'd be lying if I told you I didn't already have him on some fantasy baseball teams. But then, like as a Mets fan, like I'm watching these games, I'm like very aware. Okay, so this is on national television, ESPN, so everyone's talking about it too. That Yankee lineup had, I think, 2 real players in it.
Yeah.
And one of them was Anthony Volpe, who had like a 90 WRC plus last year, and the other one was Austin Wells. And then the velocity was down again, which really hurt his fastball grade. Sometimes, and this has been the deal with Megill for years. We talked about it a lot in the show last year. Like when he's above 95,
he's great.
He's great. But once he gets a 94 and below, he gets pelted. And that's because like his fastball is in such a precarious spot that when he loses those 2 miles an hour, like the shape kind of dies and it becomes like what people call a dead zone fastball. It just kind of sits there.
And he doesn't really have the command either of that fastball. Like he leaves it in the middle of the plate a lot. So
yeah, chucks. But there's always going to be so many things pulling me both directions on Tyler McGill. I just want him to get to April and see if he can get his sea legs under him and if he can like sustain the velocity, because him going back down 93, 94 in the start, if this was major league players, they would have murdered him, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that would have been good for everybody's psyche to have Tyler McGill's ERA pop back to 4 in the spring. So we're not expecting like a Cy Young candidate, but I like seeing him do well. I think he's basically, he has a really big stranglehold right now in the fifth star of the job. It's his to lose for sure. And he's very far ahead of it. And there is something, but it's just like, I'm going to definitely wait before getting hurt again.
Cautiously optimistic. It's a cautious come back to your ex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's also like, I don't know. It's just, that's also like the exact opposite thing most people want to hear in like sports talk and like sports takes. Like
being like might, super calm.
Might be okay. There's still some good things. There's also some bad things. People want to be like, he's the fucking bastard. I'm never going to trust this guy again. But that's, you're never going to get that.
I got to make that fake quote card thing. With Adrian Hauser's going to throw a complete game shutout on like July 8th or whatever you said. And then Tyler McGill might be okay. Like that's like,
that's amazing. I've been trying to do fake quote cards forever for all the content I've been a part of, and no one's ever listened to me. I still have those old PSDs from back in the day.
We'll get on it. Yeah. I'll have some time tomorrow. But yeah, on the pitching side, starting pitching has been great. The other fun thing with this team, that bullpen, and this is something we actually like in the house that I'm staying in, three Mets fans here, we talked about this bullpen. It's like 12 guys deep of that could be major league bullpen guys, but there's like eight that you have to do because of options and like you'll just be losing people. So it's in a very bizarre spot where it's like, everyone I think agrees Nate Lavender probably deserves to be on the major league roster, but there's no shot he makes it out of camp because he has options and like Michael Tonkin and Jorge Lopez don't. Like, what are you going to do there?
It's a super weird conversation. Anthony DeComo, really good article about it. And it was based around Sean Rifoldi, who I totally love. And I think he super deserves a spot in the team right now.
He's fucking psycho too. I love that.
They basically said that every single day when all the guys get together, like in the cafeteria for breakfast, like the first thing they all talk about. It's like, only half of us going to make this team, huh? Yep. It's going to be about options. Yep. But it's like Diaz, Rayleigh, Ottavino, Drew Smith are like for sure locks. I don't think anything could take them off these teams. And then you have Lopez and Diekman, who I think are locks.
Probably.
Both of them right now, they're way down velocity this spring. So that's either one or the other in my head. One is like they know how safe they are and they're just chilling, saving the bullets. The other thing is like something might be wrong because they're both kind of old guys anyway. So I don't know yet. I'm not there. I can't make that decision. But both those guys I think are locks, but the velocity has been way down. They have not been effective at all. So then you have two spots left in the bullpen plus the fifth starter spot, which I don't think we actually need in rotation until like the second or third week of the year when we have like 13 games in 14 days. But because that's also McGill has an option. Fujinami has an option. Lavender has options. Lucchese, Bulo, Hartwig, Walker, all those guys have options. So then you have like two or three spots in the opening day roster for Tonkin, Sean Reed Foley, Phil Bickford, who's been horrific, Johan Ramirez, and Yaxel Rios. So it's like, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out because like a lot of these guys are doing so many things in the spring where you're like, I want them on my team.
You just like casually dropping in Phil Bickford's been horrendous.
Have you seen him? He's been terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him on TikTok too. He looks crazy there as well. Like he's just poor Phil Bickford. He catches a lot of strays on this podcast.
No, I love Philly B. I mean, you didn't even think he was on the team. I always think Philly B has a chance, but he's been so bad he might pass through and actually get to Syracuse. So it's not even that bad of a thing for the organization. But I don't know, like the Fuji fanfare right now is crazy. People are obsessed with Fuji right now. Like you could put the picture of Fujinami if you're a Mets content creator, it gets 400 likes. Like Shitar Fujinami on the mound. Our boy Worthy, you're in the house with. He did this the other day. We just put a picture of him.
Let's try it. When you guys are listening to this, go check our Twitter, see how many likes it's going to have. James is going to put out a tweet on Monday, at some point on Monday, and it's going to be like, if only Lisan Al-Gaib was for fucking Shitar Fujinami.
No, the problem is that he got the loss day and he didn't pitch well. So I don't want to be negative because I like Fuji. We had Trevor May on. He also loves Fuji. Everyone who's met Fuji says great things about him. So I want to post like Fujinami yesterday and do like 0 2/3 innings, 2 earned runs. Like I don't want to flame the guy, but there's going to be a time next time he pitches. Like I'm just going to post a picture of him, probably with no comment or caption. And you guys will see. Yeah. And we'll see how it goes. But it's just like, for a reliever who signed for $3 million in minor league options, the hype is out of control. It's a little bit ridiculous. Like that might be a little bit our fault, I'm going to be honest. Like I think we might have struck the flames as fire a tiny bit. But like, he's still only throwing like 94, 95 miles an hour. He threw so lackadaisically, and it's not lackadaisically, but he was taking it so easy his first outing that Savant was calling his fastball splitters because usually he throws his splitter 93 and the fastballs are 94 just because he was taking it so easy. So I think that is a big reason why it's just like he hasn't gotten the results we're looking for yet. It's just kind of getting the feet wet right now. And it's also because I think he probably understands. Someone probably told him, I think you might spend the first couple weeks of the season in the minor league just because of those options and everything else happening with the team.
Yeah, I mean, it feels crazy because, again, like you said, the hype and the fanfare that's going around the mountain of a man that is Shitar Fujinami. But relatively speaking, from a roster construction standpoint, there's no reason not to have him start 2 weeks in AAA and be like, hey, the guys who have no options, you want to stay here, pitch well. Like, yeah. Prove it. Be that guy.
And also, you hate to have these conversations, but someone will get injured, whether it be the rotation, the bullpen. 100%. Like, by April 15th, something's going to happen. Someone's going to pull this, someone's going to pull that, and it's a shame because these guys are all good, especially I'm just super falling in love with Sean Reed Foley. Like, everything this guy's done since he came back from Tommy John last year has been amazing. I don't think a lot of Mets fans realize how good he was last year, and I realized it because we were all just so checked out and dejected, whether you were watching the team or employed by them, about what was going on last season. So it's like he was sitting 96 with like lights out fastball shape, like 19, 20 inches inverted vertical break, where it's just like coming at you like this. 50% strikeout rate in 8 innings with a plus changeup and a plus slider. Like, he does that thing with the changeup and the slider that I've talked about, like one of my favorite relievers, Ryan Stanek, does. Who just signed with the Mariners, where it's like the fastball has that rising action, so it gets on you hard, you work at the top of the zone with it. And then he has a changeup and the slider that are like 2 miles an hour difference, but about 8, 9, 10 miles an hour off the fastball, but they move a little bit in opposite directions and both downwards. So it's like they're a little bit frayed off, and the fastball comes out, and it's like a lot of good weapons that work together. And the stuff looks fucking awesome this spring still. Like, I want him in the Major League bullpen. He's good enough to be in the Major League bullpen. He might be one of the best relievers in this Major League bullpen when it's all said and done. Like, he like what he has right now is awesome. And it's just,
no, that's a real quote card.
It's serious because like those three pitches, I'm like, I look at all the pitchers in his bullpen, I'm like, this guy, and I'm just a sucker for that fastball. Like, when you have that fastball, I'm so in.
Yeah.
I love it so much, but it's just like watching him. I test everything. I test stats behind it. Like, there's no miss.
He's got edge too, man. We lack a little edge on this team. This team's a lot of nice guys, no edge necessarily. And Sean Reed Foley, I'm sure, is a nice guy, but something about like that mustache plus like the army haircut and like the tattoo sleeve, I'm like, this guy's like ready to brawl at any moment. And what have I said the Mets need this year, James?
A couple fights. And it's also cool looking back to last year, because we, again, the dejectiveness of like the fan base and everything, how the season was going. And he was pitching these games in August at like 17 people were in the stands of City. And Mets were 12 games. The Mets were 20 games under 15 games under 500. And he was striking out a guy in the sixth inning and just like screaming and flexing. Like, yeah, that's it. I'm playing for my fucking life, and I'm going to let you know about it. And then the other guy right now, who looks amazing, also taking camp by storm, Nate Lavender. Yep. Dog. We told you guys this quote from last week about throwing 91, 92, but like believing in yourself and making it play up. He's got like a 50% strikeout rate so far this spring. And it's just like, he's not going to make the team because he has the options, but he will pitch for the Mets this season, barring injury. And I think that there's a good chance he finds a way to be effective. He's great extension. He has good deception. Like, he's a good pitcher. Like, I think he's better than Hartwig, who did the same thing last year. Like, there's a lot here to like.
He reminds me very similar, throws harder. But the feel that I get watching him pitch feels very Brent Suter-y, where it's just like this crafty lefty that you can't really understand why nobody hits him. But at the end of the day, you see the numbers and you're like, look at that. Nobody touches this guy at all.
I get Lavender and Gervais confused. Isn't Lavender a righty, Gervais a lefty? No.
Lavender's a lefty. Gervais is the righty.
Gervais the righty. Okay. Yeah. That's my problem. Whatever. But
he'll just hold up the hands.
Yeah, no, hold up my hands. Yeah. I gotta know, but still good. And then there's been a lot of people have been talking a lot about Johan Ramirez too. He's also had amazing stuff. Always been a darling of stuff. Plus,
he's from the Mariners and Pirates, right? Johan Ramirez, and he was like the dude who threw like 101, but didn't know where it was going.
Yeah, I think a cup of tea with the Angels. I want to say too, maybe something like that. But yeah, and also Yaxel Rios. He also basically throws 100 miles an hour. That's your boy. Like, all of those guys: Yaxel, Johan, Reed Foley, and Tonkin, who also was great. Tonkin threw 80 innings in the major leagues last year for the team with the best record. Like, you can't really put that guy down.
Really like Tonkin a lot. I think he's awesome. Super valuable in a modern bullpen with what he's able to do. Like you said, 80 innings from the bullpen? Like, what the fuck? Like, you could tell that to someone and they would be like, no, he did. No. He did. And then you look it up and you're like, oh shit. And they were good 80 innings.
I think it was like about a league average ERA, or like just below it, like a 4 ERA, which is it's amazing. But it's like, he also, I think he was the most innings for any reliever in the league who made all of his outings as a reliever. And there was another crazy. I remember I had the stat when we signed him originally, and the show was a little more dry. But I think like half of his appearances were multi innings. Yeah. Like, he was such a glue guy for that Braves staff. And the Braves last year were like trying to bring on AJ Smith Shawver, and they had Bryce Elder hot and cold certain times of the year. So it's just like, sometimes you need the guy to come in the fourth and get you the sixth. And Tonkin was that guy a lot, or more so for the Braves. We're winning by six and we need to get from six to the eighth. And Tonkin was that guy again. Like, he's just a good guy in a bullpen to like kind of soak up all the extra innings. I think Budo is going to work well as that guy too, but
kind of Trevor Williams-y a little bit from a couple years ago.
Less of a star this build, Tonkin, than Trevor Williams, but it's just like, you need these guys in the modern bullpen. Like, I need you to go three. You can go two. Can you give me 40 pitches? Maybe. Give me that again on Sunday? Yeah, thank you. And that's what Tonkin does. I think there's a lot of fun stuff in this bullpen. I think we're going to see him deployed in a kind of a fun way, and it's going to be cool to see how it all works out.
definitely. And then on the offensive side too, because we want to talk about a little bit offense as well. Vientos had a pretty good weekend. He's swinging the bat a little bit well. People are getting excited, feeling good about him again, especially with the J.D. Davis being put on waivers, which, James, J.D. Davis, you want him back, yes or no?
It's honestly funny because, like, if there was a world where, like, this MLB The Show, and, like, if Vientos had, like, a pure potential grade, I could see, and I knew he wasn't getting past a certain point, I'd be like, yeah, because I think right now J.D. Davis is probably a better baseball player than Mark Vientos, which is hilariously probably the same argument we had. You don't think so?
Probably better than Brett Beatty as well right now, truthfully speaking, at this exact moment.
So then, theoretically, I would say, yes, they should, but I just don't think that this year is about giving these guys a chance. And, like, J.D. Davis is going to cost $7 million, so for the Mets, he's going to cost $14 million, and he gives them less of a chance to get under the tax by the end of the season. So I think just leave him off. He doesn't help this team enough for it to happen, but I think he's still a good player. Could do well on a lot of teams, but it's just funny to probably, hopefully, maybe put that trade to bed.
Yeah,
the Giants. As long as none of those bad pitchers ever get good,
which I don't think there are. I think they're pretty much all done. Thomas Opucky, you're not worried about him getting a resurgence?
No, it was the other one who was in Brooklyn, who was actually
Carson Seymour. No, that's not him.
He was in that trade too. But
Zwack,
yeah, he's also
Zwack.
Yeah, Zwack and Seymour. Those are the guys I was worried to be like actual major league relievers. Maybe 2 years they will be actual major league relievers, and I'll give the Giants credit for winning that trade. But who really cares? Again, Vientos, good weekend. Nice opposite field home run on Sunday. He loves an opposite field home run. Two more hits and three hard hit balls Saturday night. Like, the only thing is that they had not put him in the field.
No.
So I think
he played
very
third today.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah, he played on Sunday. Saturday. He started at third, Beatty DH'd.
Okay. So that's interesting. It's flip. And also, Vientos has been hitting higher than Beatty basically every time they've been in the lineup together, which I think is super interesting to note, because Beatty's also, he's still hitting the ball hard, but he's just not, I don't know, not finding it this spring. It's still spring, so I'm not, I don't know. No lift.
Yeah. The thing with that third base position is going to be interesting, because again, I think, my choice is Brett Beatty, but also at the same time, he's got to play better at some point. At some point, he has to just play better. And as much as we believe in him and people around baseball believe in him, maybe he needs to believe in himself a little bit there. He's a good baseball player. He shouldn't be performing like the way that he is. Speaking of good baseball players, though, Pete Alonso's been looking pretty good as well. I know we talked about Alvarez being so locked in, but Pete's
locked
like
in.
It fucking sucks. It's on March 8th that he's this locked in, but man, he's like the hottest hitter in baseball right now.
It's March 10th, but yeah, close. He's just three more hard hit balls on Sunday. He has 9 hard hit balls this spring. That's the most on the team. Like everything, he looks like he's seeing all the pitches. Like it looks very easy. It looks like the career is going to happen, but
contract year.
So yeah. So his 9 hard hit balls this spring, a little trivia for you. Okay. That's the most on the team so far this spring. There's two guys tied behind him with 8. One of them is Mark Vientos. Can you guess who's tied with Mark Vientos with 8 hard hit balls for the Mets this spring?
Tyrone Taylor.
No.
Okay. Starling Marte.
No. Not even close. I think 1 or 2.
Rylan Bannon.
Nope.
That's my boy. All right. I'm going to take 2 more guesses here.
Yeah. Nittier and Grittier.
Nittier and Grittier.
Both.
Zach Short.
No. Not too gritty. Too gritty, too nitty.
Okay. Too gritty, too gritty. Last guess, Ben Gamel.
Nope.
Who is it?
It's Jose Iglesias.
Whoa.
And it's like over 50% hard hit percentage because he hasn't played that much. He's just hitting the shit out of the ball. No, quantity wise, he's 8 hard hit balls, second most on the team.
Damn.
It's amazing. Yeah. He's hitting well. I think we're talking about third base. Song. Yeah. I think there's a world where there's a part like just the way that Beatty's still hitting, like he's gonna have, I think, a clean 150 at bats, do whatever he wants. Same with Vientos, but I think they have Iglesias and Joey Wendell on this team that if the bat isn't coming around for one of these guys at their base, then eventually we're going to have to lean into defense.
And I think that's premium defense from those two guys with Wendell and Iglesias.
That's what I'm saying. So I think that's going to be a part of this discussion that I don't want to have, but May 15th, we might have to have it.
Another hot quote card from James. Jose Iglesias and Joey Wendell might be playing some third base this year. People are like, ooh, can't wait. So excited. This is the team these guys are saying they can't wait to watch, Joey Wendell and Jose Iglesias.
They're ones in that shit podcast from those assholes, but... One more cool thing happened this weekend. You guys remember Simon Juan, Mets top international signee 2 years ago? He was bad in the DSL and the complex over the last few years, but he's just walked into Port St. Lucie. I guess he's used to it because he was in the complex all year last year. His first 2 at-bats, 107 miles an hour, 106 miles an hour exit velocity, 2 RBIs, 2 singles.
Gives you hope.
What the hell? That's incredible. He joined Beatty, Lindor, Vientos, and G-Man Choi as the only Mets with multiple balls in play of over 105 miles an hour this spring. And of course, Beatty has the most of those.
Yeah. This is why we can't give up on him.
No, I won't quit. 4 batted balls over 105 this spring. He's lifted 2 of them. So that's okay. But Also, Vientos has two with 104.9 exactly, which is hysterical to me. Yeah, so he's basically also has four with Beatty, but just that tenth of a mile an hour difference. But it's kind of cool from Simone Juan. The Mets gave him a big bonus. He's probably going to start the year in St. Louis this year because he just kind of has to. So it's just, he's still 18 years old. Like the fact that he hit balls off of even double A guys in these late spring training games, 107, 106 miles an hour, even just getting to 106, 107 miles an hour at his velocity as an 18 year old, I think is really good. So that's something.
Yeah. No, I mean, keep an eye out for him. And over these next few days, again, like that's why you watch the end of the spring training games, is for things like this. Like, oh, look at Simone Juan. Look at Rylan Bannon. That's my guy. God, I hope he gets to majorly get bat this year. I love that guy. He's like my size and 190 pounds. He's a fucking brick shit house, this dude. But this is why you watch the games. You get the nitty gritty. That's why you listen to the Mets Up podcast. Who's talking about Simone Juan's 106 exit velos on their podcast? Nobody else.
Two of them.
The Mets Up podcast. That's what you get here. Anything else to talk about? I don't think there is, because we want to save that Nimmo talk, and that's really the big thing for another episode.
Yeah. I think the last thing I do want to talk about briefly is the spring breakout game. Rosters were announced.
Ooh, yes.
The game's being played this Friday, March 15th, I think in the afternoon. I think the plan is Mark and I are going to stream it on our YouTube channel probably, so we're going to try and really get some YouTube subscribers back in this account, because we're doing pretty well over there. We definitely want to do better. Oh my God. That Shea Stadium, we got 400 likes. Are you kidding me?
Let's go. Dude, well, it was funny because... For those of you listening and whatever, I'm on a trip with Wardy. Wardy, big Mets fan. You guys know him. Wardy NYM over on YouTube. Go check him out. And we're waiting online to buy tickets. Oh, two crazy things also happened while this was going on. Waiting online to go tickets, and he like smacks me. He's like, nice tweet. I'm like, that wasn't me. I've been standing next to you this whole time. I haven't been tweeting. And he was like, oh yeah, James, forgot about that. He's like, he does a great job with the Twitter, which he does. But while that was happening, David Stearns and Gary Sheffield like walked right by us to go into the ticketing offices area. And then I saw Keith Ratt online waiting to get tickets as well. So you got to say what's up to our buddy Keith.
Yeah, Keith brought his little daughter Charlotte, first game today.
He apologized profusely to me on Twitter because like we talked like very briefly. And I gave him crap. I'm like, what are you waiting online for tickets? I'm like, what is this? And he's like, family day. He's like, I'm running around busy, like all that kind of stuff. I was like, all right, yeah, I'll let you go. Like, no problem. He's like, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't mean to blow you off. Like, I was just like in full demo. I'm like, dude, you got to know. I have no offense to this whatsoever. Like, very obvious you had other things to worry about than talking to me, Mark Luino. So love you, Keith.
Keith is the man. Keith really was so nice to us last year when we were with the team. Hope we're probably going to have him on this year before the season starts. But sorry, I got sidetracked just scrolling on Twitter to find the spring breakout roster. I can't believe that tweet got 400 likes. That's insane. Did you retweet it? I didn't retweet it.
I didn't retweet it.
Nice. Good shit.
Maybe I'll throw out a retweet, see how high we could get.
Yeah, let's get to 1,000 now. Because the other one, Lisa Nalgaib, that was an amazing tweet. If anyone's seen Dune, Mark and I went to see Dune with the boys this week. That was a good tweet. I can't wait to retweet that as next home run. But spring breakout rosters, I think it's fun. I think a lot of people were concerned that these rosters didn't have Christian Scott or Mike Vassell on it, but I think that it's honestly a good thing they weren't on it, because I think that means that the Mets are very seriously looking at them to pitch in the major league sooner rather than later, which I think we're kind of aware of, and we think it's a real thing. It basically means that their starting pitchers, we want to say probably like 7 and 8 for the major league team right now. Or 8 and 9 maybe, because you got Budo and Lucchese behind McGill, even though Budo might be more of a glue guy, we'll see. But we're going to have Blake Tidwell in that game. We're going to have Dom Hamill. You're going to see Nolan McLean and Brandon Sproat, who haven't pitched professionally yet, who apparently are throwing 100 miles an hour in the complex, do crazy things. Tyler Stewart has had amazing results last year in single A and double A. He was a beast. Calvin Ziegler, we've been known about him for years. He also has an amazing fastball shape. Paul Gervais. And then Daniel Suarez, Wilkin Ramos, is that Ben Simon or Ben Simone? I don't know.
I don't know. It's got to be Simone. I can't imagine it's Ben Simon. But two very different people. Ben Simon's like from like Westchester, Pennsylvania. Ben Simone is from Venezuela. Like, it's very different.
Oh man, I feel bad. I put an accent on that if it needed one. Then
I don't know. But then on the offensive side too, like I'm excited to see like Ronald Hernandez. I don't really know that much about him, but I know he can hit. Like that's something that's gonna be interesting to see on the offensive side.
Ben Simon, born in Princeton.
I was close.
Went to Elon.
pretty close there with Ben Simon.
Ben Simone.
I think we're only calling him Ben Simone, though, from now on. Like, if this guy ever makes the majors, he's Ben Simone.
Ben Simone. I'm down for it. That's fine with me. Also, happy to see Parada. I think he was still first-round pick, but it's great college stats. Like, I don't think we're as high on him anymore at this point, but, like, I'd still, like, he still could definitely be a major league player. He's going to be, I think, a double-A for basically his whole year, which is a good place to be for a 23-year-old catcher. We just have Lisa Nalgaib in the starting lineup, the chosen one. So
he's like 3 years younger.
he's, I think, like 8 months younger, so he's viewed a little differently, but it's a freak. And then I think the stars are going to be in the Mets infield and outfield, of course, because we're going to have Jet Williams, we're going to have Drew Gilbert, Ryan Clifford, Luis Angel Acuna. We're going to see Colin Houck, Marco Ramirez, and Jeremy Rodriguez, a couple exciting teenagers, Jacob Reimer, our guy, Jesus Baez, who a lot of people are high on. He's like the Mets, I'm trying to think of like a way to phrase this. Like he's the traits prospect in the Mets system right now. Like he's the big guy, the big arm, the power, the shortstop. Like he's got a lot of that stuff going on. Then William Lugo and Julian Tillian, and then other outfielders, Alex Ramirez, who I think is doing a lot right now to reinvigorate his stock as a prospect. I had some people
in Double A.
Yes, I had some people talk. Who was it? Someone DM me. I DM a lot of people. If you guys ever want to talk Mets, DM me. Got to try to build it up. But someone was like, hey, Alex. Oh, I think it was just in replies to this tweet. Like people quit on Alex Ramirez. I don't think people quit on Alex Ramirez. I think there was a chance when he was like a back end top 100 prospect where it's like, okay, this could go nuclear now. So everyone's like sitting around waiting for the nuclear jump. But he had a down year hitting. He had a down year defense. He's probably gonna be a corner outfield guy now. So when you're just become a corner outfield guy who hasn't hit the shit out of the ball every level you went to, you're no longer going to be a top 10 prospect. But that's also okay because he's still tracking to be a major leaguer. He just went from like Julio Rodriguez to Gregory Polanco. Which
I was literally just about to be like, it went like Ronald Acuna or like some other random outfielder. Gregory Polanco. Yeah, Gregory Polanco is a good one because he's another gangly motherfucker like Alex Ramirez.
Thank you. Big dude. Gets the bat to the ball. Things happen, but just not athletic enough to be a center fielder. And then Nick Morabito, who I think is a fan of the Draft Nick Mark channel.
That was Reimer. Morabito is the dude that they took who's like a freak athlete. And they're like, we don't necessarily know what position, but we know that he can run in the outfield. Like, let's see what he can do.
Yeah, and Rylan Thomas. But I think the Mets have one of the more exciting rosters that team put out there for this event. I think it's also just more exciting because of how familiar and aware we are of all these guys. Yeah. And it's going to be so cool to see these games. I think this is the best marketing idea that Major League Baseball's had like in decades, like since steroids. Yeah.
I'm super excited for it because I love prospects. Like I love watching these games, and the fact that you're going to actually be able to watch a full team of these guys play a full game, I think is really exciting. It's a showcase, and you don't really get to do that too often. The MLB draft doesn't have the same hype because these guys don't come into the league instantly. The international prospect signing doesn't have hype because those guys are 14 years old when they're getting signed. So this is a way to put spotlight on players that could be the next stars and educate fans around baseball. Like that's why my videos do well on prospects. People just don't have information on a lot of these guys.
And information is hard to get in a lot of them. So it's going to be cool that this game is going to be happening, one, on SNY, but we'll be streaming, and two, have StatCast data available. Like we're going to get to see the way these guys' pitches are moving. We're going to get to see how hard Jet Williams and Ryan Clifford and Drew Gilbert are hitting the baseball.
There might be some guy where you're like, what the fuck? Like, holy shit, this guy did this? All of a sudden, he might be the top 10 prospect in the system because he hit a ball 110 or whatever he did.
This could be huge. Like, if Jesus Baez puts a bat in a ball for 111, like, he's suddenly, like, top 100 list, you're gonna be looking at him. But it's like that, that's gonna be the cool thing. It's also cool that these games are being played interdivision. Like, the Mets are playing this against the Nationals, so it's like starting rivalries earlier, which I like. Yeah, I think baseball is kind of losing its sense of rivalry. They're becoming NBA-ish, which I hate, and I want these local regional rivalries to maintain forever.
Totally. Again, remember to subscribe to the Mets the Podcast YouTube channel because we will be live streaming that. We're not going to watch. We're going to be watching the game. You're going to see our reaction. We obviously can't show the game because it's copyright stuff. But if you want to listen to the game in the background and hear us react to it and hang out with us because we'll be talking to chat, that's where you can go. Mets Up Podcast YouTube channel. Otherwise, I think that's it for this episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching. Follow us on all our social media at Mets Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download and subscribe. Follow James on Twitter at
James_Shiano.
And me at Giraffe Neck Mark with a C. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And we'll catch you all for another episode later this week. Maybe still boots on the ground. Who knows? We'll see. Peace out.
Peace out. See you guys next time.